It's time to Fade the Chalk.
Fade the Chalk.
Presented by the FTN Network, helping you win your fantasy leagues and dominate in DFS. And now, here are your hosts, Derek Brown and Adam Pfeiffer.
What's going on, everyone? Welcome back to the Fade the Chalk podcast, brought to you by the FTN Network. I'm your host, D-Bro, and with me, as always, to break down these awesome DFS Conference Championship games, this is my co-host Adam Pfeiffer. Adam, what's going on, man?
Feeling good. It's 2 days away from the most important game of my life. It's been a long week. I'm excited, though. I mean, there's a lot of... This is one of the more exciting Conference Championship weeks. I mean, you have arguably the two best quarterbacks of all time going at it. Then you have probably the two best young quarterbacks in the NFL right now going at it. Should be really fun. It's Friday afternoon right now, so we're getting some pieces of news, you know, filing in. That's important, but it's going to be a fun weekend, and congrats again to you, man. FSWA finalist.
You had to bring it up.
I have to, man. FSWA finalist for DFS Writer of the Year. Much, much deserved, my friend.
Dude, look, thank you, man. Like, I we talked about this before we turned the mics on. I feel like this is one of those awkward moments. Like, I'm not really good at taking compliments and all that kind of mess, man. And I'm not just trying to sound humble and stuff. Like, to me, this feels like that entire feeling you get when you open a birthday present in front of an entire room of people. And everybody's like, so what do you think? And I'm like, I mean, it's good. I'm not going to say it's not, man. It's definitely, it's validating for all the long hours that we put into this, that we pour into the podcast or writing and all that kind of stuff, man. So, thanks. I really appreciate it, buddy. I mean, I was at home yesterday. One of my kids has been dealing with an illness and stuff like that. So I was like at leaving the pediatrician's office and like, I'm hearing people like tagging me in Slack channel and stuff for FTN. And I'm like, wait a minute, what's going on? And then the announcements come out and I was like, man, somebody must have spelled somebody's name.
Yeah, you probably thought Cam Akers was traded or something. you probably thought Akers got traded and everybody's like, oh my god.
Dude, hey, you're not wrong, man. I was really surprised and still kind of floored. Really, I'm in disbelief. So I appreciate it, man. I just look at it as a testament to all the hard work that we've been putting in for FTN, everything. Across all of FTN, like Brad, Pat, Jeff, everybody. We had 10 nominations for FSWA Awards across all of FTN Network. Awesome, awesome to see. Because you and I know before, like, even we, like, this rocket ship blasted off 7-8 months ago, there's so much work that has been done behind the scenes to make all of this, all of these sites, content for multiple sports and DFS and betting and all these different things to come to life. So it's definitely gratifying to see that, not only as a company, for myself and everybody moving forward, man. So, no, I really appreciate it. I was hoping you weren't going to bring it up on the pod, but I figured it was coming.
Had to. I understand, like you said, you don't like compliments, but it's well-deserved, man. I'm not just saying that. Like, you worked your ass off. So, obviously hoping you come away with the win, but... speaking for someone that hasn't been nominated or anything like that, like I can imagine in this industry with how many incredible writers and analysts are, like just being nominated itself is a win, I feel like. So
yeah, absolutely, man. I mean, just to be in that company with a lot of the names that have been mentioned and stuff like that, like I said, is very surprising and humbling, dude. So it's awesome. I mean, fingers crossed, let's see, you know, how many of these we could sweep for FTN Network, dude. So getting into these games, man, we have got, you talked about it, two fantastic games this week. Both of these totals are over 50. Spreads are really close, man. I feel like we are in for some really, really good football. Like, people don't want to poo-poo the last few weeks of playoff football and be like, okay, where's all the shootouts? Where's the score? Where's the points? Where's the scoring? Dude, I think we could get it all of it this week. So jumping into this first game, Tampa heads to Green Bay. The over-under is set at 51.5. The spread is 3.5. Green Bay is favored in this game. Adam, what are your thoughts here, buddy? Let's kick this off with the quarterback positions. I mean, I know both of these guys are in play. Tell me your thoughts on both of them, and if you got to pick one of the guys that you're going to roll in like a single entry or three max, who is it here?
Yeah, it's super interesting on this slate, right? Because you have Rodgers and Brady in this game, and then you have Mahomes and Josh Allen, or what we expect to be Patrick Mahomes, who are like just, I mean, Rodgers is the MVP, but in terms of fantasy, like Allen and Mahomes have ceilings that just, I don't know if these other two quarterbacks have if they all hit. But if I were to pick one, it would probably be Rodgers. We got the word that Antonio Brown's going to be out for Tampa Bay, so it's definitely a little bit of a hit to Brady. And if there was one team that will be able to find some success running the ball in this game, I think it would be Tampa, not Green Bay, especially with the Buccaneers expected to get Vita Vea back, who's an elite run stuffer. This is already an elite run defense without him, so you can imagine what his impact will be like. So with that being said, I would prefer Rodgers if I'm choosing. The price difference isn't too crazy. And as we know, this Tampa Bay defense, you know, for the last 2 years now or so, they've been a passing funnel defense. I know Green Bay's at home, but I just don't know how much they'll be able to run the ball here. I mean, 68% of the passing touchdowns in the regular season against Tampa Bay, or 68% of the touchdowns against Tampa Bay this year have been via the pass. It's the fourth highest rate in football. I just think Rodgers and Adams are going to win against these aggressive, you know, talented but inconsistent Tampa Bay corners. Not to mention Alan Lazard looked good last game, and MVS is always a threat to take one deep. So give me Rodgers strictly due to the fact that I just think they're going to have to rely more on the passing than Tampa Bay might.
So I love both the quarterbacks like you're talking about here. I think it's really interesting. I mean, Rodgers, I think we get – I mean, look, put it this way. We talked about it last week and how freaking stinking good the Rams defense is. They couldn't pressure him. They couldn't do anything to stop them from moving down the field. I don't think that Tampa has that chance either. I mean, we've seen both of these corners definitely, like you talked about, been beat. Over the last five games, I mean, Jamel Dean's allowed 18 catches on 25 targets. We have talked ad nauseum about Sean Murphy bunting in the slot. That is where you attack. We saw the Saints have success, and Traquan Smith had himself a game. Now, one of those was Carlton Davis absolutely blowing coverage. As much as he wants to talk shit on social media about shutting down Michael Thomas, Traquan Smith went for a long touchdown, and that is absolutely on the back of Carlton Davis. Like, if you go back, if you look at all the next-gen little videos.
He pushed him to the linebacker, and it was like the linebacker was never there. So it was, he literally, like, directed Traquan Smith to someone that wasn't there, and everybody, and then it was just a blown play.
And Traquan Smith is just streaking down the field like, bye! It was so funny, man. But this is all to say that I love both these quarterbacks. Price point, and honestly, ownership, I lean a little bit to Brady in this spot. And I think that, yes, Tampa can definitely attack with the running backs. We'll get into them in a second. But this secondary, outside of Jaire Alexander, is not one that you need to really be scared of. Now, we're getting a little bit of rumblings that Kevin King was not at practice on Friday. So I think that's immensely, immensely interesting. Because if we're talking about how they attack, I think they pick on King and they pick on Chandon Sullivan. They try to stay away from Jaire. And I think that Brady could definitely have himself a game in this one. Considering his price point, considering that he is definitively going to be the fourth quarterback as far as ownership goes for this week, because everybody and their mama is going to click and play Mahomes, Allen, Rodgers, all over Tom Brady. I actually love Tom Brady at like point per dollar. I think that he can have a fantastic game in this one. This is not any kind of shade against Rodgers. Like, I want exposure to Rodgers this week. But as far as the lineups that you can kind of build, the ownership standpoint, and we're looking at ways to be different on a two-game slate, I think that Tom Brady is one of my favorites. Like, he's probably in my top two quarterbacks to play this week.
It's a fine price tag, and even with Antonio Brown out, like, say Kevin King is out and they just have Jaire shadow Mike Evans, and, you know, you still have positive matchups with Godwin and Gronk, and Cameron Brate even played a pretty large role down the stretch here. So,
or Scotty Miller,
right? And Scotty Miller and maybe Tyler Johnson get more run, and we'll talk about them in a second, I would imagine. But yeah, I mean, on a four-game slate, when you have, I mean, I guess is the four best teams in football. Like, I know I would say Green Bay, Kansas City, and Buffalo are definitely the three best teams in the league. If Tampa Bay is fourth, I guess they deserve it. You can make the case that maybe some other teams are better just overall, but when you have Tom Brady and their defense playing well, they're going to be able to hang with anybody. So, yeah, there's obviously a lot of players to choose from, but, you know, Brady's going to give you the rushing, not in yardage, but, like, Tom Brady's going to run for a touchdown every other game from a yard out. Like, we know that happened last week. Like, that's another – is he going to run like Josh Allen? No, absolutely not. But I think Brady at his price – like, if this was a regular, like, 10-game slate on a Sunday and Brady was 6,100, he'd be underpriced. And he kind of still is here on this slate.
He is, dude, because people are not looking at – they want to talk about he doesn't have rushing equity. Dude, it doesn't matter if he has rushing equity when he's throwing – at five of his last seven games, he's thrown for 345 or more. He's literally scored 22, 26, 34, 32, 26 DK points in his last five games. Like, that's awesome. Like, the guy has 30-point upside in this spot. That's the one thing that I don't get. Like, I don't think that people really understand of how immensely good he's been, how high the volume and the yardage has been, and how high his ceiling has been. So, we're talking about price points. And you're looking at Tom Brady as 61 freaking hundred. He is $1,500 less than Patrick Mahomes. And you could do a whole lot of things with $1,500 on DK. Like, that's fantastic for a guy that if Patrick Mahomes goes for 30, if he goes for 35, dude, if Brady gets 28 or 30, that's fantastic. Considering the other guys, especially the wide receivers that you could possibly fit into your lineup this week, yeah. I love Tom Brady.
Yeah, I have no problem with any of these guys. Obviously, they're all great, but like you said, you get a huge discount to Brady, and like, yeah, if this Chiefs Bills game does what a lot of people are hoping, expecting it to do, and finish like 35-31 or something like that, then Allen and Mahomes will have a higher ceiling. But I mean, these Buffalo games in the playoffs haven't gone exactly how we'd expect. I know there was crazy wind in the Baltimore game last week. But I still think, and we'll talk about it, I'll just save it for the Bills game, but I think, like, Brady's ceiling isn't, like, so far off from those guys that you can't consider him at 6,100. Like, I think if everybody hits their ceiling, you know, Josh Allen and Mahomes could go for 40, but Brady could go for, like, 33, 34. We've seen it.
Exactly. Like, it's definitely in the range of outcomes. And for this game, I mean, here's the thing, dude. Everybody is going to want to stack Kansas City and Buffalo. Everybody is going to want to stack that. I think that there's a lot of merit that this first game could shoot out, and then there is a lot of merit that these pieces in this game are going to go under-owned versus all the Buffalo and Kansas City pieces. I love this game. I think it definitely could shoot out. Moving over to running backs in this spot, I mean, really, running back on this slate is definitively, immensely, and horribly gross. But there are some interesting plays in this game, and I want to talk about Tampa's running backs first because I got a stance on a two-game slate. You got to make stands, and I'm going to talk about one of them in here in a second. But for Tampa, I think that a lot of people are going to go straight back to Leonard Fournette, and I'm not saying that's wrong because Green Bay has allowed a ton of production to receiving backs. That is definitively the role that Leonard Fournette fills in this offense. Like, you look over the last four games, these two running backs have been on the same field. Fournette has eclipsed him immensely in routes run. 83 routes versus Ronald Jones's 43. So, really, we talk about this, Adam, all the time, like about telling a story with your lineup. Leonard Fournette makes sense in lineups that I'm building where I think the Buccaneers are going to be trailing. In any lineups that I want to build that I really think, and I think that Ronald Jones is going to come in under-owned versus Fournette this week. And I really like Ronald Jones in this spot because you could tell yourself a narrative of the Buccaneers get up by passing, what have you, and then they run. That's exactly what they did the last time they played. And I'm not saying this game is going to play out exactly the same, but I think there are ways that you could be contrarian, and people are going to talk about correlations and that Ronald Jones doesn't correlate well with Tom Brady. Yes, is that right as far as the passing game role? Sure. Does he correlate in a game script, in a story where you're building a lineup where the Buccaneers get out in front and then they run the damn ball versus a softer Green Bay run defense. And Brady gets there with his 303, and then Ronald Jones just runs out the last quarter or the last quarter and a half. So we're talking about being different on a two-gamer. I think that's one of the ways that I'm really looking at going in this on this two-game slate. I think that Fournette is going to be higher roster than Ronald Jones, and I've really got a little bit more interest in Ronald Jones, even though I think that Fournette is definitely viable. I'm still going to have exposure to him. But before we get over to the Green Bay backfield, what are your thoughts on Tampa's?
I think if you're playing a handful of lineups on this two-game conference championship slate, because running back is so bad here, you almost have to get some exposure to Ronald Jones because was banged up and towards the end of the regular season, didn't play in the Washington game, made his debut against New Orleans last week. He only played around 20% of the snaps, 29% of the snaps. Leonard Fournette was at 68%, but he still had 13 carries on those snaps. Now, like, if Green Bay's run defense continues to struggle here, Ronald Jones is a player where you've seen it all year, where if he's healthy and he's ripping off 7-8 yards a run and just looking good, like, Fournette's going to all of a sudden be the second option. He's going to start this game as the starter and everything like that, but there is an easy path to Ronald Jones getting hot in this game, and he just stays in the game. I worry about his pass catching ability because he just, you know, neither of these running backs can catch the ball, but Fournette's been a little bit more trustworthy. Last game he ran 23 pass routes, Ronald Jones only ran 4, but if that kind of balances out and they both kind of run like 12 or 13, then that helps. But I agree, like, Ronald Jones, $700 difference, like, Fournette might get the goal line work, but Ronald Jones could easily break one in this game, and I know that Green Bay's run defense, you know, they'll let you get to the second level. So I definitely think Ronald Jones, especially when you have a mess in the backfield in Kansas City, you have a Buffalo backfield that really won't run the football, and we'll talk about that, and then we'll talk about Green Bay's backfield, which is one of the worst matchups in fantasy. Like, kind of by default, the Tampa Bay backs are in the best overall spot on the slate.
Yeah, and I'm not even going to fault people if they wanted to play both running backs and get wild and play both of them there in one lineup. It's probably not a direction I'm going to go, but they do definitively have different roles in this offense. And to your point, man, I actually think that Ronald Jones could get more red zone work. I mean, over the last four games, both of these guys have been on the field. Ronald has actually got more red zone rushing attempts, 8 compared to Leonard Fournette's 4. Now, I know Fournette, in everybody's mind, just scored with the receiving touchdown last week, but Rojo's actually the guy that's been getting the totes inside the 20. So I like him. I think that people are going to automatically, or not automatically, but more likely click Devin Singletary near that price point and not want to play Ronald Jones. And as gross, and you would know I am not a Rojo truther, as gross as it sounds, I've really got a lot of interest in Ronald Jones in this game. But moving over to Green Bay, I don't have a lot of interest in either one of these running backs, Adam, and I understand if people want to talk about, like, all right, but this is where you get low-owned 6,500 Aaron Jones, and could he break a long run? And yes, they played Rams, and I talked about not wanting to play him last week, and the Rams were top three run defense. Tampa's just as freaking good, if not better, and they get Vita Vea back. There's so many different factors and why I'm not that interested in Aaron Jones. And it's really because, like, I think that both of these teams have the ability to throw the ball, especially if we're talking about Green Bay has not shied away from throwing the ball. If they are put into a game script or a situation where it's more conducive for Rodgers to just be like, all right, screw y'all guys. Like, I'm just going to go throw it 40 times. We're going to throw. Like, I don't really have a lot of interest in Aaron Jones or Jamal Williams, especially if you're looking at, like, Adam, last week Jamal Williams had 5 red zone touches and Aaron Jones only had 2. Can we say that that might not still happen, like, this week in a tough matchup? And if you're really playing Aaron Jones, you're playing Aaron Jones for one of two things. The fact that he could break off a big run, and you're playing him for red zone equity. Dude, if he doesn't break off a big run, if he gets cucked at the goal line by freaking Jamal Williams and the only rushing attempt that they get in the red zone for the entire game, like, then you're dead. You're dead in the water versus other mid-6K or 5K wide receivers that you could have played over Aaron Jones and just played a cheaper running back on a gross slate for running back. But am I wrong here and you have more interest in Aaron Jones than I do?
I mean, Aaron Jones has 20 carries in the game once this year.
Yep.
Like they're as much as Aaron Jones is as dynamic as he is compared to Jamal Williams, I've said this for like 2 years now, like Jamal Williams has a huge role in this team. He's trusted in pass protection. They like giving him the ball. He doesn't fumble. Like if Aaron Rodgers likes you, you're playing. And Aaron Rodgers likes Jamal Williams. So like when Jones had 14 carries last game and Williams had 12, I don't think that was a fluke or anything. Like we've seen this for over a year now. So with that being said, like, yeah, Jamal Williams is a little bit banged up entering this game. He was limited in practice with an ankle. I expect him to play, and as long as he plays, that's going to limit the ceiling for Aaron Jones. And if you need 20-plus touches, most cases, against Tampa Bay's run defense because they're so good to even be a good fantasy play. So if he's only getting 13 to 17 touches, that's probably not going to do it for me unless he scores three touchdowns from a yard out. But like you mentioned, Jamal Williams is getting the goal line stuff or a lot of the goal line stuff last game. So on a two-game slate, it's hard to say, yeah, just full fade him because you can easily just sprinkle in whoever you want. And if they hit, they hit. But just from a pure volume plus matchup perspective, like it's not overly exciting. Not to mention, like, yeah, he's not getting a ton of work, but A.J. Dillon's actually, like, active in these games, whereas he was, like, not even playing. He obviously had COVID for a lot of the regular season, but, you know, he had six carries last game. He's playing more snaps. He gets some short yardage stuff. So it's just, it's a tough, you know, especially when he's the highest-priced running back on the slate. It's tough to really get too interested in Aaron Jones.
Well, I think people are going to look for that certainty. Like, okay, who's the pay-up running back that I got to get in there? Because I don't want to get burned by Aaron Jones. And it's like, here's my whole thing, man. If Aaron Jones, like, his ceiling in this matchup, yes, I understand. Does he have, like, in his supposed ceiling, 30 points, 40 points? We've only seen Aaron Jones score above 25 DK points twice this entire season. He's only hit above 20 DK points on three different occasions. Like, so all of this ceiling that we're hoping and we believe and could happen, where the hell have we seen that all year? Like, if Aaron Jones hits 18 or 17 DK points, does he burn you on this slate? Because my answer is no. Hell no, considering the wide receivers that we have here. But am I wrong? And do you think that, like, if he gets 18 to 20, does he burn you? And you're like, oh, shit, I had to have played Aaron Jones. Because really, that's the ceiling that I'm looking at for Aaron Jones is 20 points. More likely 16 to 17. And at that spot, I'm not worried about that burning me.
Like, if you don't play Aaron Jones and he gets 18 to 20, you're not, like, freaking out. But if you do play him and he gets 18 to 20, I think you're happy.
I think you're happy, but that doesn't mean that you're shipping or you're banking anything. Like, I don't think that Aaron Jones getting 20 on this two-gamer is going to assure you that you're definitely going to take something down. Not if these other wide receivers or other payup options, because if you go low at other positions, can get more. That leaves me off Aaron Jones, man. There's just so many different factors where I cannot play Aaron Jones on this slate. Like, I'm not telling people to full fade him, but if you're running three, maybe four lineups, I'm really more about maybe you get him in one of those, and that's about it for me.
Yeah, I agree. I just haven't liked the workload, and now it's a terrible matchup, plus Vita Vea is going to be back. So,
agreed. So moving over to the wide receivers in this spot, man. Tampa is the one that I really think is immensely interesting. Like, I don't understand. We've talked weeks and weeks and weeks about how DK gets drunk with their pricing. How in the absolute hell is Mike Evans 5,800? Tell me that, Adam.
I think they're all kind of too cheap. Like, even if Antonio Brown was active, 4,700 would be intriguing. Godwin's 5,400. And, yeah, like, I think their prices are off here, and then it becomes even more interesting now that Antonio Brown's been ruled out. Now you have potential value with Scotty Miller and Tyler Johnson. Scotty Miller probably going to be the next man up playing on the outside, and Kevin King is questionable, but like even if he plays, like we talked about Kevin King, the types of receivers he struggles with, the smaller, speedy receivers, that's Scotty Miller for sure. So like even if Kevin King's active, I still like Scotty Miller here. The question is, if King's in or out, what does that do for the rest of the corners and the other matchups for the receivers?
So, all right, so we're just now getting news breaking right now that head coach Matt LaFleur said Kevin King was not at practice on Friday because of a back issue that popped up. So definitively have to watch this because I am really, really big into wanting to play Mike Evans, but I will say that comes with a caveat because everybody wants to talk about Jair Alexander and shadowing and stuff. Jair is not shadowed since week eight. Now, when Jair did shadow, yes, it was one of these games when they played Tampa previously. In the five games where he shadowed, King was out for three of those. If Kevin King, I want Kevin King to play. I want Kevin King to play because I think that puts Jair on one side of the field. If King is out, that does take me off of Mike Evans because I do think that it's more plausible that Jair shadows Mike Evans in this game. And if that happens, dude, Jair Alexander has been absolutely fantastic this year. Like when he shadowed Evans, followed him on 76% of his routes, one target, no receptions, no receiving yards, no touchdowns in week six. And Alexander's been fantastic, man. Like, all of his coverage, he has not been allowing anything the entire freaking season. So you definitely have to worry about that in this matchup. Now, if King plays, I want all the Mike Evans. I love him in this spot. And I think that Chris Godwin is going to carry a lot of ownership for good reason in this game. I really, really want Kevin King to play because I want to play Mike Evans. But if not, I mean, look, I think that Chris Godwin is firmly in play because Chandon Sullivan, last five games, 18 targets, 15 receptions. You can beat this guy. He's allowing catches basically anytime he's thrown at. So I think that if King is out, I'm going to have more exposure to Godwin. I'm just going to eat the chalk there and be fine with it. But I'm not that big on Scotty Miller, man. Like, if King has to be out for Scotty Miller to come into play for me, if King is playing, I'm not that into Scotty Miller because, again, if Jair plays sides, he's going to see Scotty Miller on about 45 to 50% of his routes. I think that we see less 12 personnel because Green Bay's pressure rate is not even comparable with Washington or New Orleans in these last 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. We saw Gronk go out and post 78 yards at a touchdown the last two times these teams played. With Antonio Brown out, that pushes me on to more Gronk, and the Kevin King, that situation is going to push me either on or off of Mike Evans playing him this week. But do you see anything else for these wide receivers? Like, will you play Mike Evans even if he gets the shadow by Jair, and how much interest do you have in Miller and Tyler Johnson?
If Jair is going to be shadowing Evans, it's even at 5,800, it's hard to feel great about him just because there's still so many other receivers on the slate, despite it only being two games, because you have the receivers, like three Bills receivers are in play, maybe even four, because depending on what they do in their offense and what I think they're going to do. And then you obviously have Tyreek Hill, who's underpriced and stuff like that. So, like, but if Kevin King's out or in and we do see Jair play sides, then it becomes a lot more intriguing for Mike Evans, who has as much touchdown upside as any receiver on the slate outside of probably Devontae Adams. So, and again, at his price, he's really fine. But, I mean, Godwin at 5,400, he should have scored last game. You know, couldn't hang on to the football as he completed the catch. But 5,400 for a guy who's going to see, you know, he's seen seven targets or more in four straight games, probably gets closer to 9 or 10 if they have to throw in this game, especially without Antonio Brown. I just think that's a really nice price tag from a 5,400. And then you can take a shot, especially if you're playing multiple lineups, on Miller or Tyler Johnson. But I do agree. I mean, we saw Tampa Bay make it an effort to leave Gronk in the pass block against Washington. He ran a little bit more routes against New Orleans, ran 19 pass routes. I think that goes up closer to like 25 or so in this game. So that would be really good for Gronkowski, who obviously has immense touchdown upside as well.
Yeah, I'm with you, man. And look, the matchup versus Green Bay and tight ends, I mean, it's definitely one that Gronk can take advantage of. I mean, we saw it the last time they played. So I like him. Over to the Green Bay receivers, dude, I think they're all viable. Like, obviously, I don't need to throw stats at anybody to tell you Devontae Adams is that dude. and Davante Adams can absolutely punk Carlton Davis. Not worried about that matchup at all. So yes,
we will
Davante
see if he's
Adams,
talking on Twitter after this game.
Yeah, I'm sure he's going to be silent as a freaking church mouse after this game because Davante Adams is going to put him in his freaking place, dude. The really, really interesting thing for me is where do you stand on Lazard versus MBS? Because I think Lazard, after last week's game, plus the matchup with Sean Murphy Bunting in the slot, is going to get some steam. I'm not saying it's wrong. I have interest there. But this almost feels like a spot I want to go back to MBS, man. Like, he's still going to run 30% of his routes, MBS is, in the slot. He has the speed and the double move capabilities to beat Jamel Dean on the outside. Now, Tampa, they've been really good this year, but if you want to look at just where they're better at, they're 7th in DVOA versus short passing, 13th versus deep. It doesn't sound like a huge, huge difference, but we've seen over the back half of the season, this team give up a lot of long plays. If you're telling me that Lazard is going to carry more roster percentage than MBS this week, I think that MBS has the higher ceiling in this game, and he needs less targets to capture that because we know what his role is, and that is as the deep target. I'm more interested in MBS than I am Lazard, but are you the other way around?
I think I slightly prefer Lazard, but I think both are extremely viable. Like we've talked all year how Jamel Dean and Carlton Davis can be really aggressive corners, and they can get beat on double moves. And MBS just has the straightaway speed to kind of beat anybody. But if he does a double move or any type of route where Jamel Dean bites, like, he could get separation in this game pretty easily. So yeah, I think you can mix in both receivers. Like, obviously Adams is the guy. We don't have to tell you to play Davante Adams, especially at 8K. But as for the secondary receivers, I think both are really solid options. I don't really think that, like, people are going to look to them too much because they still think this is, well, they're right. I mean, they still view this as just Davante Adams' team, and it is. But, like, if they can't run the ball here and Rodgers has to throw the ball 40 times, like, sure, Adams will get 15 of them, but the rest have to go somewhere. We know they don't throw to the running backs at a crazy rate, so I have no problem with both. Not in the same lineup, unless you're just, you know, absolutely just stacking this game up and everything like that. But, I have no problem with both.
So, bringing up these secondary receivers and options in the passing game, I guess rank these for me, Adam. Like, and putting Robert Tonyan into this conversation, because Tampa is ranked, I mean, look, they're better against tight ends. Well, they're 25th in DVOA against tight ends. We've seen, like, the Saints attack them with tight ends. We've seen other teams attack them with tight ends. If you're looking for, okay, you got a Rodgers team, you're going Adams, who's your second guy to pair him with? Like, give me your order here for these three. For me, it's MBS, Lazard, and then it's Tonyan. But where do you stand? Like, how is your order? Is Lazard one for you?
Yeah, it'd probably be the same as you, just switch Lazard and MBS.
Okay, so Tonyan's the definite three there.
Yeah, I think so. I know the numbers haven't been terrible for tight ends, or like Tampa Bay hasn't completely shut down tight ends. I just watched, you know, Devin White and Lavonte David, and I struggle to get too excited about tight ends against them.
So, I'm going to bring this up more in our next game. I think that two tight end is immensely viable this week on getting different on a two-game slate, especially after Kelsey, where all these other guys are priced, and tying your quarterback to his tight end, like basically just saying, all right, I'm going to play Kelsey. Don't give a shit. I'm going to play him. I'm going to play him all and everywhere, and it doesn't matter. If you want to fade him, that's fine. If you're fading him, good luck. That's all I could say. Because Travis Kelce has been that dude. He is that dude. He's going to continue to be that dude every single freaking week. So, one, do you think two tight end is viable? And are you just going to pair with your quarterback? Or if you're looking to stack this game, do you lean Gronk over Tonyan?
I prefer Gronk.
Okay.
Especially with Brown out. And Green Bay was bottom five in pressure rate all year. So I think this is a game, like I said, where they can just let Gronk run routes. They won't ask him to pass block as much. So I like that for Gronk.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's merit definitely to stacking your tight end with your quarterback. If you want to tell me you want to play Gronk straight up over Tonyan just based off of median projection, raw points, ceiling, upside, and the ability to get two touchdowns, I'm firmly with that, man. Any other parts on this game before we move on?
Nope.
All right, so the final game for the conference championship. Buffalo is heading to Kansas City.
Wait,
The
wait, wait,
over-under
wait,
is at a
wait. Buffalo, you said Buffalo in the conference championship, right? Like that was a thing that you just said. That's real? Like that's real.
Yes, it is. Yeah, I know. Get yourself out of your Buffalo onesie for a second. Stop pinching yourself. You are awake. This is really happening. They do have a shot at the Super Bowl. Buffalo is going to head to Kansas City. The over-under is set at 54. Kansas City is favored by only three, so they are giving them some credence here, Adam. What do you think? Kick us off here, man.
Yeah, so we started the podcast at a good time. Patrick Mahomes cleared the concussion protocol about 20 minutes ago. He's good to go, but that toe is legitimately an issue. I think this is going to be interesting because the Chiefs' offensive line has not been it's been arguably one of the weakest points of their team this year. The reason it's not being talked about is because Mahomes is so good at reading defenses and getting the ball out when and where it's supposed to be. And he can obviously escape at an above average rate. So we haven't seen Mahomes take a ton of sacks or get pressured at an insanely high rate. But their offensive line is not great. Their interior especially. So if Mahomes' toe, a couple plays into the game, he's running around and starts bothering him again, I think that could really have an impact on this game. And I think guys like Ed Oliver and Jerry Hughes could really make an impact here. But with him not being the concussion protocol, we know he's going to play. I see this game as the Bills have to do whatever it takes to stop Travis Kelce. It's funny because we have Packers and
Do you
Bucks.
think that they can, though? Do you
No.
think it's possible?
No. They have a
Agreed.
better chance of slowing him down, but they are not stopping him because here's why. It's funny because the Bills and Chiefs last played in Week 6, same with the Bucks in Tampa Bay or the Bucks in Green Bay. So kind of funny how it played out. In that Week 6 game, that was when Buffalo's defense was playing legitimately terribly. When we were saying you could kind of target anybody except for whoever's lined up against Trey White. Like that's how bad they were playing. They didn't have Matt Milano in that game, and the Bills ran a ton of zone. And what they did was they had, Trey White would line up against Kelce for a lot of the beginning of the plays, but then they would drop into zone. And I remember on one of Kelce's two touchdown passes or catches, they played a zone. Trey White stayed in his zone and then let Kelce past him because he thought the safety would be over top of him. The safety came late and he had a touchdown in the corner of the end zone. So I've talked a lot about how the Bills in the past, when they faced elite tight ends, will put Trey White on them. They didn't really do that much against Baltimore last game. And I'll admit it, man, Trey White has not been good in these first two playoff games. Luckily, it hasn't impacted them too much, but I
They
could
did
see.
with Doyle, and Doyle still got him, man.
Right. Like, I could see them just saying, you know what? Kelce's going to get his regardless. We have Matt Milano for this game, who we didn't have in Week 6. Milano, I still think, is one of the best coverage linebackers in football. Used to play safety. Kelce's going to get his. It doesn't matter. But I think Buffalo is going to try to make sure he doesn't go for a buck 15-2. Because remember in that game, when they first played, the Bills played off and let Kansas City run the football. And that didn't work out because Clyde went crazy and then they just couldn't really do anything. I think a mindset you have to have against Kansas City is in every facet, you have to attack them, right? On offense, I think we got into this mindset where, okay, run the football against them, keep Patrick Mahomes off the field. But at the end of the day, all you're doing is killing your own time because the Chiefs are going to score. It doesn't matter. They're going to score. It doesn't matter. And then if you're running the ball and keeping them off the field, all of a sudden you're down 14 in the fourth quarter with 6 minutes left and you're running out of time. So I think the Bills on offense are just going to attack. And on defense, I think they're going to do a lot what the Browns did last week. And Tony Romo was talking about on the broadcast, you send four, but the fourth one is a corner or safety and you drop a D lineman back into coverage. I think we could see that. But at the end of the day, Kelce's getting his. And I think if you don't play Kelce in your lineup, you're probably in trouble.
I think you are too, man. Like, I don't care if Kelsey's going to be 75% rostered. It does not matter to me. I'm just going to play more. Kelsey has been ridiculous all freaking season long. And even your point to Milano, man, even this year's Matt Milano has not been what we saw last year's Matt Milano. Like, in his coverage this season so far, 71% catch rate, 100.8 passer rating.
Yeah, if Matt Milano's at 100% like production, Kelsey's still getting at worst 80 and a touchdown. Like, it's just
– exactly.
It doesn't matter. The thing is, like, in that Week 6 game, Tyreek Hill was a non-factor. But again, they just ran the ball. Like, it was a huge Clyde Edwards-Helaire game. You know, Tyreek only had 20 yards. I don't think – Buffalo is going to straight up play the same defense, but I still think they're going to try to invite Kansas City to run a little bit. It's interesting to see where Trey White's going to line up, because again, like, you know, Tyreek Hill can get his against anybody, but they don't really line up Trey White against Tyreek. They didn't earlier in the year. I'm really interested to see what they do.
Get some Kelsey. I think Trey is going to move around.
Yeah, I think they move him around, and there's going to be spots where.
Did you watch Baltimore? Like, Marquise got free.
Oh, 100%. He should have scored. Trey. He should have scored when Huntley came in.
Like, that's one of the biggest reasons why. Like, if you're looking at it and you're saying to yourself, okay, who is my top wide receiver? Who is the guy that I'm trying to force in every damn lineup? I lean Tyreek Hill over Davante Adams.
I don't get the prices for these receivers in this game. Either one of them, Diggs or Tyreek. What are we doing here?
I don't know, man. Like, I want to try to wedge in Tyreek Hill and Stephon Diggs and Travis Kelce into as many lineups as I possibly can. And I understand that Diggs did not have a fantastic game last time, but we need to take last game and these two teams played and throw a lot of that shit out the window, because, dude, come on. In Week 6, Buffalo threw 51% of the time in neutral script. The rest of the freaking season, they're throwing at 62%. Kansas City ran the ball on 60% of their plays in neutral game script last time. The rest of the season, they're tied with Buffalo for the fourth highest neutral script pass.
I will tell you, like, there's not many people that follow the Bills as closely as I do. They are a almost completely different team than they were in Week 6. Tremaine Edmonds was playing terribly. They were trying to run the ball still. Matt Milano was inactive. The defense as a whole wasn't creating a lot of pressure. Stephon Diggs was playing well still, but he's literally, like, he's in his next form right now with how he's played. John Brown is healthy. Like, they are a much different team than they were in Week 6. Like, incredibly different.
If they're going to throw the ball versus Baltimore, they are still going to do that versus Kansas City. Because, look, I'm going to step out and say it, dude. Baltimore is a better secondary than Kansas City. Over the last three regular season games, Kansas City's shown some cracks in the pavement, man. They're 13th in yards per attempt allowed, 7th in passer rating, and 8th in completion percentage. And so, I know that they faced Herbert, Ryan, and Breeze in those games, but Josh Allen ain't no slouch, dude.
He's better than all of them.
He can carve this secondary up. I'm not worried about that. It looks like Bashaud Breeland's going to play in this game. I know we talked a lot about Kelsey and these quarterbacks. I don't want to get lost and not discuss these running backs.
Can I talk about Josh Allen real quick? Because I have a take.
I mean, you're not going to let me get through the rest of this episode without you bringing him up. So go ahead.
So remember in the Colts game where Josh Allen ran like crazy? They were, had a lot of just QB draws with him. He ran 11 times. Yep. Those were – I read and I listened that they were – majority of them were checked at the line of scrimmage by Josh Allen because the defensive line was spread out. I think we could see a similar look from the Chiefs. And if that's the case, I think Josh Allen could run a lot in this game too. Because – I think, like, the Bills aren't going to be like, okay, we're going to, you know, Brian Daboll's an idiot. Like, he's not going to be like, okay, let's keep the offense off the field and run it with singles. Like, no. But I think we could see Josh Allen check into those runs a lot in this game, kind of like the Colts game. And by the way, why is he $6,900? I know he didn't do much in the last game. They didn't need him to. The weather was terrible. It was a bad matchup. This should be much better. So that's my take on Josh Allen. I think we see him kind of checked into those design runs a little bit again in this game.
So does that push Devin Singletary at, like, way down the board considering all of that? Because we talked about it last week. I was more into playing Devin Singletary. Like, yes, I understand all the reasons not to play him. I really have a lot of, like, pause about going back to that, and that's not just getting burned last week by it. But, like I said, I don't think this game plays out anywhere close to what it did last time. I think both these teams are going to throw the damn ball the entire freaking time. And at their price points, I'm going to play Ronald Jones over Devin Singletary. I know Rojo has no pass game role, but
Devin Singletary has no running game role.
He has little bit of a role about anything, dude. Like, he ran a route on 82% of Josh Allen's dropbacks last freaking time, and all he had to show for was three freaking targets. Like, that ain't getting it done, man. Like, and he got seven rushing attempts last week. A lot of that came towards the end of the game. Mm-hmm. Like, they don't want to run the ball. They want to throw the damn ball. Like, it takes me firmly off of Devin Singletary. Like, will I possibly get him on, like, maybe one of the last, like, one of my five lineups that I run this week? Sure, as a last guy in, but he's not a guy that I'm prioritizing. I want to prioritize the pass catchers. And at their price points, if you're talking about, do I play John Brown? Like, if you go Devin Singletary or another 4K wide receiver, or do I play John Brown and play, like, Rojo or something like that? Give me John Brown and Ronald Jones over the other 2v2 all day. Like, I love John Brown in this spot. I think that if they access the ceiling, we saw that, like, the Bills, you talked about it, and them feeding screens to John Brown. They made a concerted effort that the pass game went through John Brown and Stephon Diggs last week. Rashad Breeland has been beat. He looks like he's going to play this game. He has been up and down all season long. He has allowed five receiving touchdowns in his coverage. And it's not like it's this like long list of world beaters that he's allowed receiving touchdowns. One to Nelson Agholor, one to Mike Evans, two to Tim Patrick, and one to Mike Gesicki. So you give me John Brown's speed on the outside versus Breeland, who can stay with dudes, but he's a better physical corner than he is like staying with burners. I think that John Brown can get it for a long one in this game, but am I crazy here, Adam?
No, I like smoke in this game. A lot of the reason that the passing game went through Diggs and Brown last game is because Marlon Humphrey, when their team is at full strength for Baltimore, plays in the slot, and that's where Cole Beasley is. So I was surprised to see him get a goose egg, but I wasn't surprised to see him not as involved. And, like, you could make the case that Kansas City's rookie corner, Ladarius Snead, is their best corner. He's played really well.
He's
their slot guy. So, yeah, I think the better matchups are for Smoke and for Stephon Diggs, who for some incredibly insane reason is 7K on DraftKings, although he's been the best receiver in football outside of maybe Adams this year. I don't understand that, but I know the Chiefs have been really good against opposing number one receivers. I also don't care because Stephon Diggs is uncoverable, especially against man coverage. He's played a decent amount of zone, but when he's 7K, like, I just don't care.
I don't care either, man. And to your point, over the last five games, Breeland, 18 receptions on 30 targets, a 120 passer rating, and three touchdowns in his coverage. Charvarius Ward, 12 for 22 targets, 88 passer rating. Legarius Sneed. So this is where I was talking about Breeland and Sneed and who I'm going to play, John Brown versus Cole Beasley. Like, if Breeland somehow missed this game, it would push me to Cole Beasley more, because then Sneed probably kicks outside, then maybe we get Rashad Fenton, that's who Cole Beasley scored his touchdown in the last meeting that they had. But if Breeland's in, I don't want any part of Legarius Sneed. Over his last five games, 31 targets, 21 receptions, 78 passer rating in his coverage. I would much rather, and I think that the Bills attack Kansas City with Stephon Diggs, John Brown, and if you want to give me a third option, I'll actually play Dawson Knox. If Breeland's in and Snead is going to be on Beasley, I actually would much rather kind of go with that third pass catching option. If you're going to stick three pass catchers with Josh Allen, give me Dawson Knox, man. He's running a ton of routes per dropback. He's getting red zone looks. The ceiling isn't that high, but unless Cole Beasley gets 11 to 12 targets, his ceiling isn't that damn high either. So his price point is super, super low. Kansas City has struggled versus tight ends and short passing. I would rather play Dawson Knox in this spot, considering everything we know as a third pass catcher, over Cole Beasley. Are you with me with that, or would you still rock Bees?
I mean, I don't think, like, in a vacuum, I think Beasley's still safer, but I actually do like Dawson Knox at 2,800 here. I think he's going to score. You know, the Chiefs haven't been great against tight ends this season. We know that. And I think Dawson Knox, like, he doesn't need 7-8 targets. Like, if he gets 5 targets, catches one in the end zone, you're fine. Gabriel Davis is questionable. I would be shocked if he doesn't play. He was limited today. He's got an ankle injury. I think he's going to play. You could also take a shot at him at 3,500. We talked about how much he scores, and the Bills went four wide like almost 20% of the time last week. If we think they throw the ball a ton in this game, which they throw the ball a ton every game, like when John Brown's in the lineup and this team's at full strength, they go four wide and they go empty a lot. So that means Gabriel Davis will be on the field. He's been more than a capable player this year, and he's found nose for the end zone. So, I think I'd definitely prefer the Green Bay receivers over him, but he'll be much less popular.
I think he will too. Now, do you think Gabe Davis plays here? Because I was looking at practice reports.
He's questionable. He was limited with an ankle. I think he plays though.
Okay. Because that actually kind of like pushed me. So if Gabe Davis was out, I would have in large field tournaments some interest in Isaiah McKenzie, but if Gabe Davis is in, I'm full off of McKenzie. Yeah.
I wish they would just run the ball with him more. He gets like 9 yards every time he touches the ball.
I love McKenzie, man. He is fantastic. He's been awesome in showdown all year long. His red zone role is fantastic. Like basically when he is on the field, he's getting a target probably, and it's usually coming in the red zone. Like around 30% of his touches this year have either come on the ground or through the air in the red zone. He's a fantastic candidate to score a touchdown and be like one of those guys that everybody's like, what the hell? Where'd that come from this week? But like I'm saying, if Gabe is active, I don't want McKenzie. But I would have some interest if Gabe Davis somehow does sit in this game. Moving over to Kansas City, man. Like, I mean, obviously we want to play Travis Kelce. We've talked about him a ton. We want to play Tyreek Hill. These secondary receivers for Kansas City and the running backs, where do you stand on these running backs? Like, do you think CEH is firmly and well ahead of Darrell Williams? Or could you possibly play Darrell Williams as a contrarian play this week?
So I don't know if this is me just, you know, falling for the fact that CEH has missed time and this is the conference championship game and CEH is a rookie, but I think if CEH plays, he's not going to just come back and be, not that he's been, other than a couple games this year, like the unquestioned 20 touch back, but I don't think he's going to come back and just get all the work again. I think Darrell Williams is going to be, he's trusted in pass protection. He's trusted in the passing game. He's more than capable as a runner. Like, I think it's going to be like a 50-50 split. But I think Clyde Edwards-Helaire's status is like one of the X factors of the slate because Le'Veon Bell obviously has not been a factor at all this year since joining the team. And then in the playoffs, it's been all Darrell Williams, well, I guess through one game. So if Clyde sits, like, I like Darrell Williams a lot. We know you can still run on the Bills. Maybe they lean a little bit more on the run with Patrick Mahomes a little bit banged up. If Clyde plays, I still think you can consider Darrell Williams. You know, I don't think it's like Le'Veon Bell is questionable, but it doesn't matter if he plays. Like, we're not using him. But like, if Clyde plays, I have no problem going to Darrell Williams, who won't even be considered probably if that's the case.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's really interesting, man. I got interest in both the guys. I'd be really interesting on like what pregame reports look like. I think Darrell Williams has definitely done enough to earn himself a role in this backfield. Do you think that there is a range of outcomes where Clyde is the between the 20s guy and then Darrell Williams is the red zone and the pass game role? Because those are the roles that we really, really freaking want, Adam. And, like, that's why, like, I just get this really sneaking suspicion that Darrell Williams is going to be in one of the optimals this week because he's going to get the money touches.
I mean, we saw it the last time these teams played. Clyde couldn't get the touchdowns. He got all the work in between. And then Darrell Williams came in and scored a touchdown, and we know they like to play him on third downs. And like that game against Buffalo in Week 6, he only had 7 touches. I think he gets 12 in this game regardless, and upwards to 15, 16 if Clyde's out. So, like if both are active, I'm personally would look towards Darrell Williams before Clyde.
And that's fair. I like Darrell Williams a ton here. As far as the secondary receivers for Kansas City, any interest in Mecole and looks as Sammy Watkins plays and DeMarcus Robinson? Like, for me, I'm just kind of like, nah, man. Like, if Sammy has to be out for me to have any interest in Mecole, and this is saying that, like, look, Miko ran a ton of routes last week. I mean, if you look at last week's usage, Hill ran 39 routes, Hardman ran 34, and Robinson was at 31. If Sammy Watkins is back, that nukes Miko Hardman for me. I don't really have a lot of interest in either one of them because I can – there's so many other wide receivers that I want to play in that same freaking price range, dude. Like, 38 to 4K. Like, I would rather get up to Cole Beasley. I'd rather somehow get up to John Brown. I'd rather play MVS or Lazard over Miko Hardman mm-hmm. or Robinson or Sammy Watkins. But is that where you're kind of at? Like, would you rather play the secondary receivers – from all these other teams, or are you going to chase the Kansas City guys? And this is assuming Sammy's playing.
Yeah, Sammy plays. I don't think I can go to him. If he's out, I mean, I wonder if Andy Reid was just kind of saving Miko Hardman for the playoffs, because his snaps were up against Cleveland mm-hmm. last game. Like, there's so many times we watch the Chiefs and we see number 11 on the field, and that's DeMarcus Robinson, and we're looking all over the field for 17, and we just don't see him. But we saw that kind of shift last week. So if Watkins is out, you can definitely play Miko. He'll return some kicks. And again, these corners for Buffalo, I mean, Trey White's obviously great and all, but Josh Norman and Levi Wallace just aren't fast. They've been playing much better than I thought they would play as of late, but they don't have the speed to match up with Tyreek Hill and Miko Hardman. And both those guys will see coverage from those guys at times in this game. So all it takes is one against those two.
So Sammy has to be out for Miko to be, like, in your player pool.
Yeah, I mean, Watkins hasn't played since, what, the end of December? But, yeah, he hasn't played since December 27th. So, like, the Chiefs, he's not a player where it's like, if he's in, he's playing full mob in his snaps. Like, they can be fine with him playing 40% of the snaps. Like, they don't need Sammy Watkins to come back and play 85, 90% of the snaps.
So you think Miko is still firmly in play, even if Watkins is
he's in play,
in
but
game?
Because
he's not for me.
I think he's in play in, like, as more of a tournament, like, higher risk play, but he's obviously a lot more trustworthy if Watkins is just ruled out.
Okay.
Like, that's I don't fair, think man. Watkins – I think Miko could still out-snap him. That's pretty much what I'm getting at.
Yep. Yeah, I don't disagree with that. All right, everyone, that is the two-gamer for the conference championship. Adam and I are going to be back. We are working diligently on what our content is going to look like moving forward, going into the off season. We have got so many things in the works. Be following the Twitter page at ChalkFade for all of those announcements. We're going to switch this over, start diving into Dynasty content, players, NFL draft prospects, buy sells for Dynasty, bringing on a ton of guests. We're going to lay out all of that, so you got to be following the Twitter page for the podcast. Again, at ChalkFade. For Fade the Chalk, we are out.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of Fade the Chalk with Derek and Adam. Make sure to follow your hosts and the podcast on Twitter at @DBRO_FFB, at @APPfeiffer24, and at ChalkFade. Smash that subscribe button so you don't miss an episode.